let go to lead more. Vice grips have never been a tool of leadership. Share the load, help and allow people to grow with you and understand what it takes to grow a company. Everybody can be well taken care of, but if it's all about fighting over the dollars, you know, you're fighting over the wrong stuff. Come together as a team and grow a company and you'll blow the competition away.
I think most people don't do financial literacy simply because the one time they looked at their stuff, they didn't see themselves in those reports. They don't see their company.
We have to be willing as business owners to gather the information that we need and make good, strong decisions for the health of our company.
There's a difference between internal motivation and external motivation.
Who we're going to choose to be.
Be aware of what's happening.
Letting the client know that you care.
Without a good team, you're nothing.
It still does boil down to service.
When something's uncomfortable, that's what we need to look at most.
You're listening to Forrest FM, the Salon Business Show with your host, Alex Barilla Springer. For your industry, by your industry.
For 30 years, Strategies has set the paradigm for what it means to build a true team-based salon, spa, med spa, barbershop, or lash studio. They've helped thousands of salon owners transition from being reactionary and fearful to confident and thriving business leaders. Every salon spa owner has a wish list, and the Strategies coaching team eats wish lists for lunch, giving hair and beauty industry owners systems, thinking and behaviors to create predictable profit and eliminate debt, drive productivity, loyalty, and overall consistency, create a bulletproof culture, and an actionable game plan for a healthy financial future, the team seeks to help owners understand how the systems work and why. At Forrest, we're a lot like that too. In fact, we don't have a job. We have a purpose. It's to help salon owners like you succeed. That's why it makes us proud to partner with some of the leading tools, coaches, and organizations within the salon and spa industry to bring innovative solutions to help your business grow. We understand that running a salon, spa, or med spa is hard work. We also know, thanks to George Bernard Shaw, that progress is impossible without change, and those who cannot change their minds cannot change anything. And well, change is unsettling, sometimes even scary. But here's the thing. Hiding your head in the sand and hoping the hard stuff you'd rather not face goes away won't do you any good or be of any service. The first quarter of 2024 is almost done. How are things going in your business? Have you set time aside already to reassess your staff performance strategies and budget before the end of the month? The road to financial fitness or independence, success, might not always fit your dream timeline. In fact, Nina Tullio recently discussed this in her Live from the Salon Owner Summit 2024 episode. Plus, with the ever-increasing cost of living crisis playing out across the globe right now, one of the most sensible resolutions for businesses, large and small, is to learn how to save money, create a realistic budget, and safeguard their financial futures. That's why this rerun, which actually combines two past episodes we recorded with the Strategies team into one, is all about purposeful leadership and planning profit by design. If you're looking for the original conversations, you'll want to look up Season 5, Episode 223, as well as Season 5, Episode 230. Now, when you merge two past episodes into one, it makes for a jam-packed hour of insights. So my advice to you is to listen to this one when you can take some notes. So who are Michael, Dennis, and Neil, you might wonder? Michael Yost is the president of Strategies. He's been a part of the beauty industry since 1991 and a business owner for 16 years. Working as a coach and educator, then as director of education and now president of Strategies, has allowed him to interact with and be inspired by many great leaders and team members. This interaction keeps fueling his passion for an industry he loves. Dennis Gulo is a certified Strategies coach and a seasoned professional with over four decades of experience in the beauty industry. He began his career as a salon owner and stylist in 78 and over the years has been recognized nationally for his innovative business practices. In 2004, Dennis formalized his love for teaching, coaching, and consulting by joining the Strategies coaching team and has since been dedicated to helping salon and spa owners bring stability and growth to their businesses using the team-based business model. With a unique blend of business acumen and industry expertise, Dennis is known for his ability to help salon owners achieve their profit goals while fostering a healthy business culture. People say he's fluent in both salon spa owner and accountant. Neil Dukoff is the founder of Strategies. Over the last 38 years, he's coached countless businesses and gained international respect as the guru of team-based compensation. In addition to the award-winning No Compromise Leadership, A Higher Standard of Leadership, Thinking and Behavior, he's the author of Fast Forward Second Edition, the salon spa industry's only business reference manual, and the newly released Wake Up. He's been honored with the 2005 Art of Business Award, named one of 12 business legends and icons by the annual Serious Business Conference in New Orleans in 2006, and invited by the Best Foundation and Anderson School of Business. But first, here's the conversation with Michael and Dennis on driving your salon business like you would your car. Get ready to listen and learn, because we're jumping right in. I'm sure that in both your multiple years of salon ownership, because you've both owned salons, a lot and lots of things have changed around you. Yet both of you are here at Strategies today. You're working with salons across the US and teaching business principles and systems that have brought you guys' success as well. So can you tell me a bit more about what it was about that foundation that Strategies taught you that made you think, oh my God, yes, this is it. I need this for my business. And this is what's going to bring me to the next level.
You know, for me, it was quite easy, actually. As a business owner at that time, it simply came down to the fact that I was looking for education for my own company. Mm-hmm. Came across Strategies because really, here was the thing that triggered for me. All I knew was that my business was growing in sales, but my checkbook was shrinking in number. And I was like, well, why on earth would that happen? You know what I mean? Now, as naive as I was, I know that for probably many a listener out there, they might be going, well, that kind of is an easy answer. But the fact of the matter is, I wasn't aware of the answer. And so I was searching for answers myself to that simple question. Came across Strategies from my own company, attended a class that we have called Incubator. And literally during that class, the work that we did in that class allowed me to very clearly see why that was happening, along with many other things around my business to make it stronger. And so when I literally left that class and went, that was so powerful. Our industry needs to hear this message, because it was just clean, clear business education. There was, in my opinion, and still is, there was no smoke and mirror. There was no easy button. There was no magic formula. Mm-hmm. But it was very clear when I paid attention to the health of my company from a dollars, from a number standpoint, and I'll say numbers overall, not just financial numbers, but other key numbers as well, that's what changed my company. And I was so encouraged by it. I'm like, I got to tell all my friends about this. So that was my story. That was my, oh my God, this, I got to share this kind of thing.
My story is almost the same as Michael's. The difference being that I sort of understood numbers, but I didn't connect them to real world behavior. They were just like, isn't that interesting?
Right.
There wasn't a real connection to getting where I wanted to go. And for me, the big aha was, logically, I understood that people working together should be able to do better than people just trying to do it on their own. Mm-hmm. Like being working together for a common goal. That just it blew the top off my head, because they're an industry. We tend to set individual everything.
Yeah.
Build your following. Oh, do this. Did you do that? Do more. And what Strategies taught me was, but if we all work together toward a common goal, we could actually get farther. And that really clicked for me.
That's amazing. So I guess you've both, you know, went through this implementation of these new systems in your own businesses. And I would assume that you saw success coming from that. So before we talk about financial health, I think that's something that's really important to define is
success and excellence, are they the same? If not, how do you define them? How do those two concepts differ in your mind?
So I do think that excellence is connected to success. I think the challenge is that everyone does have a different idea of what success is.
Mm-hmm.
So I would submit that, and we're just speaking about business, not, I mean, success in life is a different, larger question. And
of course,
we're probably not discussing that. Well, I guess we could.
But. We could, but it would probably yeah. take another hour, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But in business, I think the thing that makes any business successful is the consistency at which you deliver the experience. So a successful business is one where the clients love that business. Why? Because they know that they're going to get whatever that expectation is. So, you know, a Morton Steakhouse is going to have a different definition of what that excellence is than, say, a McDonald's, mm-hmm. but they can both be equally considered successful because they are excellent at the thing they do, delivering that experience. And I feel like that in business, the definition of success is that it's based on, have you created a model and systems that deliver this excellent experience every client, every time?
Yeah, I mean, I think the jump into this, the question for me actually leads back to what I, even for me, in thinking about it, it leads back to my initial statement, which was, how did I know? All I knew was checkbook shrinking, but sales growing. So I would almost equate that to this, where in some ways my business was excellent from the standpoint of it was growing as a company. We were doing the right things to grow a company. We were providing an excellent overall, we'll just say, experience. We'll leave it at that. But at the same time, the success, and again, if you wanted to look at it from a standpoint of a measurement of, are you achieving the goals that you want, the success was not happening. Mm-hmm. You know, if my checkbook was shrinking, I wasn't successful as a business. I might have been excellent in providing a great experience, but not successful in making that experience turn into something that was financially a win for anyone involved. So I kind of look at it that way, that you've got a couple, again, success and excellence aren't hand in hand. They definitely mm-hmm. are different, you know. One's almost in the sense, one's an action and one's an outcome, and in some ways. So,
yeah. I like the nuances mm-hmm. that you both bring. Yeah, that's really interesting.
I love the way he put it at the end, that one's an action and one's an outcome. That's brilliant. That's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it illustrates it very well. Mm-hmm. It's like very mm-hmm. clear, a very clear picture in mind. And when I guess, jump into the meaty part of the subject, I want to speak, I suppose, numbers without speaking numbers, if you get me. Like, if we describe financial health, say, as an engine mm-hmm. For a salon or spa, what does that engine need at its core? What type of fuel does it need? Like, mm-hmm. how do you make sure that that engine produces its best results? And I guess we can dive in pretty deep here. There's probably lots of layers to this.
I mean, there are a lot of layers. And so if we started with the idea of, you know, of your financial health, and we could illustrate this a couple of different ways. We could use the idea of an engine and say to ourselves that, yeah, this is what, I mean, every company or every, we say engine because let's relate it to something we're all familiar with. We're all familiar with a car, or, you know, form of transportation, right? And so, you know, every car has an engine in it. It has common components that make that successful. Well, an engine is the most important component because that's what gives it its power, the ability to move and ability to go forward. And so when you think about it, you know, understanding what powers your business, what makes that engine run and the components in it are extremely important. As far as that goes. So we can kind of start to set the table from a visual standpoint around an engine and the at the core, you know, your financial health and the ability for you to understand the numbers of your business is understanding what powers your business. And without it, it's like getting into your car and looking under the hood of it, and there's no engine in there. You're not going to go anywhere. You can't travel any distance without something that powers it.
Yeah. So if a car is the vehicle and the engine, well, I'm just saying you need something to power it. So I'm going to answer specifically. You said, well, what do you use to power that engine? Well, this is where financial type literacy comes in, because you need to understand how to create a business that generates profit, mm-hmm. because that's going to power that engine. You know, right. We need to build something that's going to move us and take us where we want to go. And the bottom line, profit is going to be it. You know?
Yeah. And when you say financial literacy, what do you mean by that specifically? Do you mean like understanding like reading reports and being able to match it to real life behaviors, mm-hmm. or just understanding certain terms and how to speak to an accountant? Like, what exactly are you looking at there?
For me, you can start at a higher level, and let's stay with the car analogy for right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, you wouldn't, if you were going to set on a journey from like the East Coast to the West Coast of the United States, and you got in your vehicle, you wouldn't just set out. Right? You would have probably charted a map. Maybe you have a GPS. Mm-hmm. You've got a speedometer to let you know how fast you're going. There's a fuel gauge that you have to keep an eye on. There are other gauges and things that you're gonna utilize to get you where you want to get across the country safely and successfully.
Right.
So financial literacy is being able to interpret financial from information about your company and where you're trying to take it, mm-hmm. just as if and just as easily as looking at the speedometer or the gas gauge or the check engine light or whatever you can imagine on a dashboard at a vehicle. It really is I think it's a good analogy, because businesses don't just exist. We're trying to get them somewhere. We're trying to grow. We're trying to create a better life for ourselves, for all the people part of that business. So mm-hmm. If you can think of that and understand, you wouldn't take a journey in a car without understanding that stuff. But all small business people, all the time, we start out in our industry doing the service with our hands. And we're good at that. And we somehow miss the idea that, maybe we need to learn this other stuff too. That's about running the business and getting us where we want to go.
Right. I mean, if you build on that idea that Dennis is introducing, the idea of the gauges of your vehicle, and this is a great way for us to think about our financial reports. Well, it comes down to this. You've got three key reports that you need to be looking at. And these are just financial statements that we all need access to, whether it's through our bookkeeper, our accountant, or if you use a software to keep track of your business, whether it's QuickBooks or anything in that vein, you can get these reports right from there. And so those reports are your profit and loss statement, your balance sheet, and a statement of cash flows. Now, this is where we can start to say, okay, well, what does all this add up to? Well, I'm going to go back and make this really, hopefully really easy for us to think about, building off of what Dennis just shared. If you think about each one of these statements in relation to the gauges in a vehicle, Dennis referenced the speedometer. What's the speedometer really tells us? It tells us how fast the car is going. It tells us a bit about the performance of our car. So, well, there's a financial statement called the profit and loss statement that tells us about the performance of our business. So if you think about that, when you're reading that, it's telling you about the performance of your business. Well, a balance sheet tells you about the health of your business. Well, just like if you had a temperature gauge in your car or any of those nice red lights that might come on, the red check engine light or things like that, well, those are meant to give you indicators of the health of your vehicle. So in the same exact fashion, your balance sheet is there to give you the health of your company. And the last one I mentioned was called the statement of cash flows. And while it's got a really kind of confusing type of name, it's the one that all of us should be aware of because it tells you about your money. That tells you about your cash. And so the realistically, when you talk about cash, what does a go back to the whole engine idea? What's an engine need? It needs fuel to run.
Right.
If you have an empty gas tank, that means you're out of fuel. Cash and fuel are the exact same thing. A business can't run if it doesn't have any cash or any fuel in the tank. So if you really, I probably have now ruined driving for everyone out there listening, because now every time you look at your speedometer or one of your other gauges of your fuel tank, you're going to be thinking about, oh my gosh, my business now. But it is as simple as that. When you really get down to it, that's what makes it, you know, powerful, because you can start to say to myself, okay, I may not understand every little nuance of this, and you don't have to, but you have to understand the core concepts of what these statements tell you, just like you would looking at how fast am I going so don't get a speeding ticket. Yeah. Any, you know, is my car healthy? Do I have a full tank of gas, or is my gas gauge, is the light on and need to stop and fill that tank up? It's the same exact thing.
I want to come back to something you said when you talked about the cash flow report there, when you said that the one that we probably all should, and I find it interesting that you use the word should, is that was that something that you did intentionally because it's something that most business owners in this industry tend to overlook? Mm-hmm. And is that maybe why also we've seen so many businesses kind of panicking when COVID hit and there was, you know, no indications whatsoever as to financial help and how it was going to happen and like how long it would take and how much you would get, et cetera, et cetera. Is that something that was, I guess that the usage of that word should, was that intentional?
Yes, Michael's right about should, and it's let me put it this way. This is a hard concept. We say it all the time with strategies, but I still think people don't really believe it. But profit is not cash,
right?
They're not the same thing. And so, with many people without too much financial literacy, a lot of people will, at the very least, try to look at a profit and loss statement. And basically what they're going to do is their eyes going to the bottom line to see if they made any money or not. That's how they're using it, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you don't get that profit is not cash, you can make some pretty interesting decisions based on what that number tells you, right? So the statement of cash flows is there to give you a way to understand the actual cash. And I mean, I used to say it in jest, but it's really true. A company can go a long time without making any profit, but you get to only go about a week and a half if you have no cash. You know, once paychecks start bouncing and things like that. So it is two different things. And yes, it's a should. It's the least understood of the three statements. But think about it. Cash is king. That's a saying. There's a reason. Yeah. You know, we need to make sure that we have that, you know, in check.
And why is it not understood? Why is it like so overlooked, I suppose, or not? Like, if we pay attention to the profits so much, like, and like you said, you can go a long time, probably years without making profits, but a week and a half without cash. Like, how is it not still become something that we prioritize in the industry?
I think primarily, and I'll give this answer to it, I think primarily because when we understand a profit and loss, because it's the way we understand math to work. In other words, for all of us, when you think about it, it's the statement that starts with the big number at the top, and all you do is subtract out everything, and you get a final total at the bottom. And so it starts with the big number at the top, subtract, 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 but then you end up with the number at the bottom. It's the way our brain thinks about math. Statement of cash flows, the math doesn't work like that. So we see both positive and negative things on there, which all those positive and negatives represent, without going too deep into it, is just how cash moves in and out of our company. It positively comes into our company or it goes away from our company because of our habits and our spending or how we gain things. And so it's not a hard, it's a hard concept at first, but once you get it, the math is quite simple and quite easy. But on the surface, when you first look at it, the math doesn't make sense in a traditional way that our brain wants to perceive it. So therefore, we look at it and go, I don't understand this, and we just push it aside. Mm. And it's the most powerful thing, that's the most powerful statement, really, because like Dennis said, you run out of cash, your business isn't going far. Mm-hmm. You can be low to no profit and still make things happen, but you run out of cash, and again, just like a car, you run out of gas in your tank, well, guess what? That engine could still perceivably perform well, but with no fuel, it can't do anything.
Yeah.
Michael just said something really important too when he said that that we look at a financial statement like that and maybe don't understand it, so we put it aside. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, if you're achieving financial literacy, is you're not putting it aside, right?
Right.
Oftentimes people, and actually, and look, I'm a computer geek and I love software, but QuickBooks and things like, and software like that has made people think that they can do their own accounting.
Yeah.
And so, but because Mike, like the way Michael said it, but our brains are trained to think in this way. So we look at a profit and loss statement and we interpret that one statement in a certain way that isn't always correct because we're not trained accountants.
Mm-hmm.
But the software makes it easy to do your own books.
Yes.
So that's a good thing. You don't have to pay somebody, you know, to come and do your books, but you're trading the fact that now it's on you to learn how to interpret that stuff and do the books in a way that gives you, you know, good information.
Yeah.
Because I think most people don't do financial literacy simply because the one time they looked at their stuff, they didn't see themselves in those reports. They don't see their company because they don't quite get it. And so, oh, this must not be for me. This just must be for the accountant to do my taxes. It's not for regular people to understand. And I think that's the big challenge for all small businesses, that no, you know what? It is kind of on you to understand it. It's not just so that the accountant can do your taxes, because they have a different agenda than maybe you do.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, it's at the end of the day, your business is your baby. You know where you want to bring it, you know, yeah. You're the driver of it.
You so, got it.
Coming back to that car analogy, the driver.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about profitability because we touched upon it just there. I know that obviously you're both passionate about bringing integrity, excellence, and profitability by design into the world of salon and spa owners. What is, based on both your coaching experience, the key to profitability, and in the same kind of line of questioning, what's the most common, I suppose, quote unquote, blocker to profitability?
So I promise you, I'm not being a wise ass with this answer, but the key to profitability is to sell your time for more than it costs you. That's the answer. It is that simple, right? So the challenge is that we don't have enough financial literacy to know what an hour costs us. So we don't know if we're selling it at a profit.
Yeah.
So that's one. That's one side of the equation. You want to handle the other side of the equation, Michael?
Well, I mean, I think what I would, I think to kind of build on that is, you know, again, the key to profitability is, every business owner has to take responsibility for their actions, all right? And so part of that is you've got to be able to make good decisions. For some people, and I'm just going to call a spade a spade, for some people, the blocker is the fact they still will not change habits that have them spending more than they generate. Simple as that. And that can be the block to it. Now, it can also be other things that we don't see as much in a way, and we don't think are as harmful, but still make major impacts on our profitability. There are many, many, many businesses out there that are running productivity numbers that are way too low. Low productivity does not help you grow profitability because there's a cost that's associated with every hour that you have. And it doesn't matter what your business, how your business's pay structure is or anything like that. The most common misconception is that, well, especially in a commissioning type of environment, well, if they're not busy, then they're not getting, then they're not costing me anything. Well, the fact of the matter is there's still cost that goes with everyone. There are always physical costs, but there's also culture cost. There's also, I mean, there's a lot of different costs to your company that aren't just dollars. And so for many businesses, you know, if you want to grow profitability, it's a matter of behaving in a way that says, you know what, and this goes back to what Dennis said, the key is make sure that, you know, your time, you're charging appropriately for your time, but also make sure you're maximizing the time in your business, because there's a lot of companies out there that struggle with low productivity rates. And again, just for clarity, for anyone listening, when Dennis and I use the word productivity, we mean how many hours we have for sale in relation to how many hours have we sold in our company. So if I work a 40-hour work week and I sell 40 of those hours, well, then I'm 100% productive. If I sell 20 of those hours, I'm 50% productive, okay?
Right.
And so there are many businesses out there. We know the sweet spot is 80 to 85% is where we want to live, where there's many businesses out there that run 65, 70% productivity range. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that just doesn't add up to anything that can be a positive. It's really challenging.
So in that sense, let's say if your productivity rate is at, let's say 60, 65%, and you use the correct formula to calculate how much you should charge for your service, that end number that you get, because your productivity rate is so low, is probably not accurate, right?
Well, what'll probably happen if your productivity rate is so low is that that number might be too high for your market to tolerate it.
And then you don't become competitive
enough. Right.
Right.
Yeah, it's a balance, that balancing act that you're achieving there. But one of the first things when we see a company that's with lower productivity, we would work with them to get their productivity rate up before we'd look at that cost per hour number and decide if we're going to need to make an adjustment there, because mm-hmm. it might be, you know, oftentimes a company that's running at, if their productivity rate is high enough, a price adjustment might still be in order to get to profitability, but it won't be a ridiculous number.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing that is probably not helpful for profitability is just like if you're bleeding out cash, like through expenses and stuff like that. What are like some areas to, I suppose, kickstart the profitability if you know that your productivity rate is in that sweet spot, but you're still bleeding out cash? Like, what are some areas that tend to have salon owners bleed out?
Well, I mean, one of the first places people want to go to is let's see if there's anything that we're spending. We believe in building a cash flow plan. This is not the statement we talked about earlier, but let's plan the spending. What are we going to spend in advertising? What are we going to spend in supplies? What are we going to spend? And now creating the discipline to live within that plan. When we say planning profit by design, that's kind of what we mean. Well,
right.
We're going to live with what we just planned out. Then we planned it all out to be profitable. But a big one is, you know, people tend to not realize things like might be you're spending more on supplies than you need to because people aren't using things properly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it might not be you might be great at watching your budget, but we're not good at not wasting hair color, say, for example, if you're a salon.
A classic one,
right? And then are there things that we've gotten used to spending that aren't really helping and we forgot about it? I worked with a company and they had a Spotify and Pandora account because they signed up for one and they signed up for the other and forgot to turn the other one off. And so that comes back to, are we paying attention? Sometimes it's just in the paying attention. What I always like to leave people with on that note on the spending side is that remember that if you're running the business that's, say, a 10% bottom line, 10 cents out of every dollar are going to be profitable, right? Is it easier to grow your business by $1,000 in sales, or is it easier to cut spending by $100? Because they would have both would have the same effect on your bottom line. And so sometimes the easiest thing is to look at all your stuff and, you know, I can spend $100 less on something.
Yeah.
And you just kicked up your bottom line.
And oftentimes I feel like in this industry, especially now in today's kind of, you know, era and where we're at with technology, I feel like there's a lot of like technology that helps to reduce these like costs. And you mentioned the color example there, but there are like, you know, some stuff that you can use and avail of. And yes, you're paying a subscription, but you're probably saving a lot more money than you are actually paying for using that technology and making sure that you're using just the right amount of, say, color for the sake of this example.
Yeah.
And we always, you know, to throw one more thing in there, we always want to be aware too that, you know, our number one expense in our company is our payroll expense. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sitting here just before everyone gets their neck hairs raised a little bit too much. I'm not sitting here suggesting that people should get pay cuts or anything like that. As a matter of fact, we're firm believers that we want to grow people. You know, we want to help people grow in a positive way with their overall pay. But are we making good, smart decisions in every area of our business? And that's, I think that's just where I'll leave it. Every area of your business needs to be able to say, I need to make smart decisions. So yes, it's one thing to make smart decisions about our spending in certain areas, but we sometimes can ignore the elephant in the living room, which is, but we're making a not so great decision about our pay structure or however that is, whether you're commission, you're hourly, or any number of things. It doesn't matter what your system is. I've seen people make poor decisions no matter their compensation methodology to not lead themselves to someplace good. And so we have to be willing, and I guess this is what I want to say, and I'm going to go back to the blocker earlier that you put out there. We have to be willing as business owners to gather the information that we need and make good, strong decisions for the health of our company. Because I'll put it out there this way. When you protect your company, it can then protect everyone that's a part of it. And so we all want to work for healthy businesses, because when we do that, that business helps to provide us with the things that we come to depend upon so that we can all meet our mortgage and our rent and put food on our tables and all that, you know. So we've got to protect our company so it can protect us. And that means making good, strong decisions, not always easy ones, but good, strong decisions about every aspect of our company so that we can be a healthy company. And in turn, achieve the cool things that we set out to do when we first started it, which is when business gets fun to have.
Yeah. Michael, I mean, I love what he just said because it's the truth. Making the decision that keeps that company healthy. Being the leader, honestly, is the most important job. And sometimes, especially if we're service provider owners, it's easy to lose sight of that. You know, because we're wearing so many hats, but the most important hat is leader and the one who does make makes the decision that's what's best for company.
The second conversation you're about to hear is with Neil Dukoff. This time, the focus is on leadership as he shares some of the resolutions you should make if you're looking to shift from reactionary and fearful to confident and thriving. And what I intentionally didn't mention when reading out his bio earlier goes as follows. If Neil is speaking or writing about it, it matters. He takes on the issues that seldom get discussed in business that hold leaders back from having the companies they desire. He's brave enough to shine a light on the areas that many would prefer to leave alone, like holding leaders accountable is tougher than holding employees accountable. He's not afraid to stir the pot. The question is, Are you ready? When good is no longer good enough, it's time to listen and learn from Neil Dukoff. Here too, we jump right into the thick of it as he answers this question. How do you know that the goals you're setting yourself are actually solid and helpful to the growth of your business?
Well, you know, we work with a lot of owners, and when they're in coaching, it's fairly easy to control because our job is to hold the client accountable. But even then, we have to work really, really hard to get them to look forward. You need to have a financial plan if you want your financials to come out the way you would like them to come out, to show profit, to show cash. But to answer your question, you know, we get really concerned about how many people don't plan. Business doesn't work that way. You're set yourself up for the potential problems, and you have to work harder to come out of them. So there's two answers. One is you got to start working on a cash flow plan, because you need to have a financial objective on where you want to go, what you want your revenues to be, how much profit you want, how much cash do you want to put in cash reserve. And then the other piece is you got to plan no matter what. You can't just hope. As we say at Strategies, hope is not a strategy. It's just hope. And
I like that.
And you're setting yourself up for disappointment or surprises, and that stuff's hard to work out of when it happens.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's a bit like a game of chess, really, but you know, against yourself. You have to have like those, you know, five, maybe six moves ahead in mind.
Yeah, but to play the game of chess, you need to know the rules of chess. True. And you need to know how each piece can move, because not all the pieces move the same way. And business is the same. What a good segue. You did good on that. Thanks for the chess thing.
Thank you.
You know, business is the same way. Yeah. There are non-negotiable rules that you have to follow in business to create the outcomes that you want. And when you ignore that, your business has a really interesting way of saying knock, 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 knock on your head. You know, hey, you know, things are a little out of control, or oops, we weren't ready for this, or oh gee, you just lost your busiest service provider. What are you going to do now? And you weren't prepared. So you got to know how to play the business game of chess. You got to know how each piece needs to move in order to get you where you want to go.
I love that.
All right, I'm looking at the list I sent you. So here we go. This is one leadership one. Let go to lead more. And I wrote, vice grips have never been a tool of leadership. Leaderships that keep a death grip on decision-making, people management, projects, procedures, budgets, and other operational elements do more to stifle growth and performance than inspire it. Gotta let go. But you gotta prepare your people to let go. You gotta have a leadership team. Even if you're small, two or three people or four people, who can you share a portion of the load with? But if you're trying to do it all, and this is even more critical, and if you're a service provider in your salon, if you do hair in your salon, and you're working 40, 50 hours a week behind the chair, you're an absentee owner, because you're doing the work of a stylist in your own company. You know, you can't lead if you're working on clients all the time. So, but you got to let go, you know, share the load, help and allow people to grow with you and understand what it takes to grow a company. So let go and lead more. I've got start and finish one big project. Because if you have six things, you are already not going to do at least three of them. Let's get one across the finish line and do it by the end of March. But if you don't set the timelines, and if your people don't understand what the projects are and what the timelines are and their responsibilities, and if you're not leading it, and communicate, information flow. Man, information flow, this is not on the list, but this is part of leadership. Information flow at salons is horrible. It's horrible. go around your company right now. If you think everybody knows how you're doing and what the goal is for the month, go around your salon and ask even your best people. Go around and say, hey, what's the goal for this month? What's the company goal in service sales and retail sales for this month? And do you know where we're at? And I bet you're going to get, I don't know. If they don't, in business, we talked about chess and you got to understand the rules and how the different pieces move.
Yeah.
In business, everyone needs to know the score. That's the only way everybody can win the business game. And not just how much the individual brings in, but everyone's got to know the score. You know, what critical numbers do you want to improve this year?
Mm-hmm.
Is it first-time retention rate? Do you want to hit that 70 or 80% pre-book rate? And not just pre-book, frequency of visit. You know, because you can have high pre-book numbers, but if the clients are booking 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks out, and they really, for whatever work they had done, they should be coming in at 4 weeks, 5 weeks, or 6 weeks, you're going to need more client visits because clients are stretching out their visits.
Yeah.
So, what critical numbers do you want to improve and lock into that? And I'll give you one more. This is one of my favorites because I love the responses I get from owners. Spend 1 hour each day hanging out in the break room. And I get owners, and I'm talking, I had one owner I told that to, and they go, you mean like a whole hour straight? No, do it in 10-minute increments. Yeah, you got to go in there and spend 1 hour in the break room hanging out with your team. Oh my God. And I had one owner that go, but they're going to ask me for a raise or they're going to ask me for this, then be there, then say, hey, let's talk about what you need to do to get a raise.
Yeah.
I'd love to have that conversation because all that is set goals.
Yeah.
But hang out in the break room and listen to your team and just talk and, listen to what their concerns are. And, I know too many owners avoid that. And it's a shame. It's, I used to be a salon owner in my youth. And, I own two salons. And I love going in. I would sit on top of the dryer in the break room. At first of all, it was warm. And it was like I was holding confession. People would come in and go, and they'd tell me this. And I would learn more about what was happening in the salon, good and bad,
yeah,
in half an hour sitting on the dryer in the back room just talking to my people. And it helps relationships. It helps trust. It creates stronger bonds with the team,
yeah,
but it helps you really understand what's happening in your business and address issues that maybe you wouldn't have found out before because someone is having a hard time or they're really afraid to bring a request to you or an issue. So hang out in the break room.
You're so right. So thank you for covering those leadership resolutions. There was three in your list, and they're not all leadership resolutions. Your list isn't all about leadership, but there were three resolutions in there that really caught my attention. I would love to hear you on them. And the first one I thought was just really interesting because it's not something I would have ever, ever thought of. Start every morning by writing down one reason you love about being a business owner.
Oh, yeah. Owners can feel beat up.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I get it. You you love your business, but that's a blanket statement. But every day, write down something that makes ownership special. I mean, as an owner, you change lives.
True.
You can take a kid out of school and launch them on a career. Maybe they'll be with you a couple of years. Maybe they'll be with you a couple of months. Who knows? Maybe they'll be with you forever, which would be swell. But, you change lives. You're able to, fly your own kite, so to speak. You know, you're in control. You know, your destiny is whatever you choose to go after, and you know, right? You know, if what you love is the freedom to grow your company, to innovate, to be different, you know, write those things down. What do you love about your team? What do you love about looking at, you know, when your financials come in and you see you hit your profit goal. Wow, we're at 15% net profit. And you look at your balance sheet and you see you've got, you know, $160,000 in cash or more, whatever makes sense for your company. If you don't have any cash in reserve, that better be something you fall in love with quick once you start disciplining yourself to build the cash reserve. But, you know, find those little things that make it special to be an owner. When you start thinking about every day, what's one thing that I really enjoy about being a leader? You know, a month down the road, when you see, you know, 30, 31 items that you put down that you love about being an owner, man, that's a privilege to be an owner. And it's not just about leading, and it's not just about profit and cash and freedom, but there's so many other things that make ownership really a privilege and something special to be part of. Yeah. All right, what was your next one?
The two other ones that caught my attention, I'm just going to list them out. You can tackle them in either order. Identify and eliminate your biggest personal time waster, and then putting your company on financial diet and fitness program.
All right, let's do the time waster. I hear more people go, yeah, I don't have time for that. Oh, I'll do this. This is the best one on time waster. I want work-life balance. If I hear that work-life balance thing, that to me, that I'm beyond annoyed hearing that more so than pivot.
Right.
But work-life balance, that's choice. And you can have work-life balance sooner than later if you make the right choices. What's important that needs to be worked on? And, you know, for all owners who are service providers, you're used to having the appointment book control your time. You come in the morning, you look at the appointment book, here's your job. Start with this client and finish with this client, and it's madness in between. Wow, what a day. Wasn't that productive? Well, if you're an owner of your company, you can't work behind the chair full time. You know, I'm sorry to shatter your dream, but you can't work behind the, you know, if you want work-life balance, you shouldn't be working behind the chair full-time and trying to run your company, because you're going to be stressed, you're going to be pissing off your family, and your kids are going to grow up, and you're going to forget what their names are, and they're going to hate you for never being at the baseball games, all right? Work-life balance means efficient use of your time. You know, use your calendar like your appointment book and schedule time to work on different responsibilities that you have. And no interruptions. You know, give yourself a couple hours a day to work through those appointments that you made with yourself and get those projects done so you can leave at the end of the day, go home and enjoy your time with family or friends or whatever you want to do, and not work 6 or 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. You can do what needs to be done by organizing your time better. And there are thousands of books out there on time management, and it's all about discipline. You know, but for owners, if you're a service provider in your own business, you know, you didn't buy yourself a job. You know, your job is to lead your company. And if your hands are needed to generate revenue, your job is to make your hands irrelevant, because you got to make money with your head and with your leadership, and you've hired people. That's what payroll is for. You hire people to generate revenue, and your hands shouldn't be the money generator to keep your salon going. And I know owners that go, if everyone leaves, I'll do it myself. Well, you know, that's self-defeating. Why don't you just say that, you know, listen, I'm hiring you, but if you leave, which you probably will, I'll just do it myself. That's why people go to rent suites and booth rent, because they're not working for a company that's growing with good, solid leadership with a growth opportunity. So get rid of your time wasters, because your day can evaporate really fast. So use your calendar like an appointment book, make an appointment with yourself. And then put yourself on a financial diet and fitness program. That goes back to the cash flow plan. You know, we have a coaching package. It's $795. It's 4 coaching calls, and you send us your financials, and we build you your first draft cash flow plan. And then we take you through how we built it, and we show you how we built it, and then you do the refinements, and then the coach reviews it, and then the coach shows you how to live it after we're all done. Yes, we'd love for you to stay in coaching, but if you never built the cash flow plan, you gotta have it.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't know what your revenue goal is, and I'm not saying we're going to do 10% more in 2022 than we did in 2021. That's not a plan. What do you have to do in January? What do you have to do in February? What do you have to do in March? When are you going to hire somebody? Which means if you hire someone in March, and that means you'll have more hours for sale in March, and is that going to lower your productivity rate, or what are you going to do to hold your productivity rate because you added more hours? So the cash flow plan lets you get a picture of what's going to happen in the future. And when you live the cash flow plan, your profit and loss statement looks better and your balance sheet looks better. Your balance sheet tells you how healthy your company is. Your profit and loss statement says, how are you performing? So put it on a financial diet, you know, and you've got more, there are more items that you could trim in your expenses, that where money is just falling through the cracks. Tighten it up, use money better. And please, 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 every month, put money into a cash reserve account, open a separate money market account, and build the cash reserve. Man, we were so proud going into the COVID shutdown in 2020 on how many current and, what was really cool, past clients were contacting us on Facebook and whatnot, and they're going, thank you, thank you, thank you for all you taught us, because we don't even need the PPP loan. You know, we can get, and we had a number of clients keep their people on payroll during the shutdown. I mean, it got to a point where, you know, that you had to make the right decision. But when you go into it in good financial shape, you'll come out of it in better financial shape. And you know, a financial diet, working a cash flow plan. You know, if you're going to hire someone in March, what do you think that person's going to cost you? Let's get it in the cash flow plan. You want to take on a new product line. What month do you want to take on the product line? How much are you going to budget for that? You know, it, you know, we want to do some advert. Well, what's it going to cost? Let's put the amounts in the plan, and then we can work the plan, and you adjust it as you go. You know, because it's a plan. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, but you'll have more control following the plan. So got to have a plan.
Well, Neil, I love how this has come all full circle. We started with the plan. We're ending with the plan. This has been fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. If people want to find you online or reach out to Strategies, where do they go to? How can they do that?
just go to strategies.com and check out our website, and you can see all, you know, under events, you can go to seminars. We have a lot of online stuff that we're doing. And if you really want to learn about how to grow a company and have a business quote unquote blueprint, check out our incubator. We've been doing 4-day incubators for 28 years and it works. I mean, we've seen people transform their companies. You got to do the work,
yeah.
But we'll give you the game plan and you'll look back at your company and say, man, I don't understand how I used to do it because it's lucky I got to where I was going. So
on that note, Neil, thank you so much for all of this insight. It was great.
Most people don't use enough of their calendar, identify their top three outcomes for the day, or even ask themselves powerful questions to prompt their deep thinking. Scheduling your whole day and having your calendar reflect that can help tremendously reduce unnecessary distractions. If you're interested in learning more about strategies, you can get to know a bit more of the coaching team through last year's Live from Strategies TBX 23 episodes with Robert Miraglia, Daryl Jenkins, and Bruce Hourigan. To schedule a free consultation call with the team or check out all the upcoming events they're hosting, visit strategies.com. And if you do end up booking a call, tell them I say hi. Last but not least, I'll leave you with the question that I had originally asked Neil to wrap up the episode. There's huge power in knowing when to say no. What do you need to say no to more this year? Thanks for listening. If you're looking for the links and resources mentioned throughout the episode, check out the show notes and or head over to forest.com/FM. Also, Forest FM is built on recommendations from the community, so if you or someone you know has a story from the salon floor worth sharing, please go ahead and DM me. You can find me on Instagram at a.belspring. Over the years of producing and hosting this podcast, many people have expressed a desire to get to know me better. I hope that, with all of its imperfections, the fully rebooted Forest FM newsletter can help do just that and be something we can explore together while keeping the show all about our wonderful guests. It goes out every Monday, and it's the number one place for any and all exclusive content and announcements. Finally, if you've enjoyed this episode, there are a few ways you can support the podcast and really make a difference. 1, send the episode to a friend and share it on social media and tag us. 2, if you're listening to this on Spotify, leave a comment in the Q&A section of the episode. 3, leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And 4, well, your feedback is always appreciated. So if you've got any, send us an email at forestfm@forest.com.
Brought to you by Forest Salon Software. Forest FM episodes air weekly, sharing inspiring stories from the salon floor and amplifying community voices all over the globe. In your salon, we're at the heart of it. This episode was edited and mixed by AudioZ, Montreal's cutting-edge post-production studio for creative minds looking to have their vision professionally produced and mixed. Great music makes great moments.